The Alabama legislature could be spending a lot of money in the coming year. Coming up on the Public Radio Hour, we'll review some of the spending proposals laid out during Governor Kay Ivey's State of the State address, which include a 10-cent increase on the state fuel tax that would generate an estimated $320 million for infrastructure improvements.
We are proposing a 10-cent increase in Alabama's fuel tax. This increase will be implemented over the next 3 years. And I want to be crystal clear with you. This money will be scrutinized and watched over every single penny.
We'll also hear the Democratic response by Representative Barbara Drummond, and we'll visit with Sally Warden about upcoming bicentennial events in our community for the month of March.
This is where the state of Alabama was born 200 years ago. There is so much history here, and you don't just have to be a history lover to enjoy how that has flavored our entire area.
The Public Radio Hour on 89.3 Huntsville is next, right after this news update. This is the Public Radio Hour on 89.3 Huntsville, our weekly mix of special programs and homemade radio features. I'm your host tonight, Brett Tannehill. In Montgomery, state lawmakers may be preparing for a massive spending spree on everything from roads and bridges to new state troopers and correctional officers to expansions of the pre-K program and other education initiatives to pay raises for state workers and teachers. On Tuesday, Governor Kay Ivey laid out her agenda in her State of the State address. And spoiler alert, she did call a special session on a proposed 10-cent fuel tax increase, and that session is now underway. Later in the show, we'll review the State of the State and the Democratic response delivered by Representative Barbara Drummond. But first, let's preview some amazing things happening in Huntsville this month as part of the year-long celebration of Alabama's bicentennial. You can find a master list of bicentennial events online at huntsville.org. Each month, Sally Warden, chair of the Huntsville-Madison County Bicentennial Committee, is paying us a visit to give us a heads up on what's going on. So looking back, Alabama's bicentennial stamp was dedicated over the past week or so. Tell me a little bit about how that went.
Well, Brett, I wish everyone in Huntsville-Madison County had had a chance to be there down at the Early Works Museum on last Saturday. The U.S. Postal Service was here with a huge picture of the stamp that Congressman Mo Brooks got to pull the rope on and unveil the beautiful Alabama state stamp.
It's a beautiful scene from atop Mount Cheehaw.
That's exactly right. And the actual photographer that took the picture was on hand as well.
Listeners, if you'd like to see that stamp, just go to our website, WLRH.org, and click on the Public Radio Hour page. We have a picture there. So, Sally, what were some other special bicentennial moments from February?
Well, before we go there, I want to remind the listeners that they can purchase the Alabama stamp now at any post office, actually any post office in the entire United States, but definitely all of the post office here in Huntsville and Madison County have a big stash of them, and they can get those beautiful stamps. Other things that took place in February, early in February, and I mentioned this last month as an upcoming event, was the DNA Genealogy Conference. It's a special conference we held for folks interested in their genealogy and the use of DNA in tracking their lost ancestors. The Hudson Alpha was huge in speaking at that event. Some of their experts were there, as well as some folks from Ancestry.com. We had a packed house of people that were very interested in the DNA aspect of tracking family history. The great news is this is a conference that will probably continue well beyond the bicentennial year. Looks like it could be an annual or biannual event here in Huntsville.
So now let's look ahead to March. I know a lot of things are coming up, another nice set of events, all sorts of things happening. Our amazing public library system is looking at the antebellum period and the Civil War.
Exactly. You know, they took the last 200 years, divided it up into groups of decades, and each month they are looking at a separate time in history in the state of Alabama and doing it chronologically. In March, we are going to be having the antebellum period, and there'll be special speakers and exhibits, as well as a reading list that all has to do with the antebellum period in the state of Alabama.
Also, a replica of John McKinley's portrait, Alabama's first appointee to the U.S. Supreme Court, is now hanging at the Whedon House.
Well, yes, it is. It surely is. You know, long before the Whedons bought the Whedon House, and it was the Whedon House, the first appointee from Alabama to the U.S. Supreme Court was John McKinley. We went and searched for a photograph of him. It was actually in the archives of the U.S. Supreme Court. They pulled that photograph out of storage, took a picture of it, sent it to us, and then we gave that to an artist who did a replica of that painting.
So what else is happening at the Whedon House? We mentioned them last month as well.
That's right. They've been having Whedon Wednesdays all throughout February, and that show is continuing as well.
Another interesting event is the Alabama Storyteller event featuring the Huntsville Symphony Orchestra. That takes place at the Cooper House coming up March 31st at 3:30 p.m. And they did this, a very similar event last year in downtown Huntsville at UG White. And I heard that it was really, really a unique experience. Tell me about
Absolutely.
It.
Not what you think of when you think of something put on by the Huntsville Symphony Orchestra. What they have done is sort of gotten adventurous in an interplay between words and music. They have selected reading by great Alabama authors, and that's interpolated with some folklife chamber music. Very interesting afternoon, a Sunday afternoon.
Also, the Huntsville-Madison County Historical Society's Marker Challenge is going on right now. We have a PSA running for that right now, and that seems like it should be a lot of fun for all ages.
It is, and what's exciting about that is that by the end of March, they are going to have all seven of their trails up and going. Right now, there are four trails that are active on their website that you can go and check out. The one right around the courthouse in Twickenham, they've got one in Greater Huntsville. They've got a trail that goes throughout Huntsville and one that's just dedicated to Montesano. They'll be adding other trails that are out in the county. And how that works is you go and create an account. You have to get on the computer to create the account. You have to go on the computer once you've been to all of the sites. If you take one of the trails and do at least 80% of the markers on that trail, you will get a certificate. If you do 80% of all of the markers on all of the seven trails, there is a medallion that you will get. Each one of their historical markers that is on these trails have a three-digit code, and you go online, put that on. There's also an app. You do not have to use the app. They have trail maps that you can print off as well to use if you don't want to use the app. So a fun, free activity for families that you can do anytime you're looking for something to do.
And dear listeners, if you'd like more information about that and some links to follow, just go to WLRH.org and click on tonight's episode of the Public Radio Hour. I'm sitting here with Sally Warden with the Huntsville-Madison County Bicentennial Committee. Sally, anything else happening in March that might be of interest?
A couple of things that I want to point out. One is that the Huntsville-Madison County Historical Society also has an ongoing project that if you're downtown around the square, you need to check out. On the east side of the square for many, many years, there was a viewing place to see some original bricks. Well, over the years, this got sort of tired and worn, was very difficult to see down. The bricks had gotten mossy. Well, the Historical Society, in connection with the Huntsville Historic Foundation, went off on a project to refurbish that viewing station, and they've been working on it now since September. These are the bricks originally made right here by craftsmen in Huntsville for the sidewalk in the 1800s. You can go and take a peek and see what it looked like to walk where you were walking now, what it looks like underneath. It's very interesting because it's not at street level anymore. One thing we did over the last 200 years was raise the level of the streets by putting things layer on top of layer. So this original brick sidewalk is actually down beneath, and you look down there to see them. A lot of fun. Speaking of feet and walking, though, the Land Trust of North Alabama has a series of historic hikes going on.
They do have an amazing
March.
Spring hiking series planned.
Amazing. And actually, in honor of the bicentennial in March, there are two that are specifically dedicated. These are guided hikes on historic trails. The first one is the Railroad Bed Trail. That was the old trail where the railroad went up to the top of Montesano back when the inn was up there at Montesano. It was used not as long, and along this trail are markers that tell the history of that. Bruce Martin, who is a local historian and also a hike leader, will be leading that on Saturday, March the 16th. A couple Sundays later, on March the 31st, he will also be leading a Montesano history sampler on Montesano. Now, these particular hikes, because they are so popular, you do have to sign up for them. They are free, but they do ask for reservations.
And so they do fill up, too.
They do fill up, and you need to go to the Land Trust website, and you can just sign up for those hikes, one on March 16th, the other on March the 31st. Looking ahead to April, there will also be a hike on early in April, on April the 6th, the Walls of Jericho in Jackson County. Mike Dalen will be leading that hike, as he regularly does, to that infamous site. It's a 6-mile hike, downhill
all
the way, downhill all the way in, uphill all the way out.
Right.
So, but again, check out the Land Trust website to sign up for those free guided hikes.
And you can also find those hikes on our community calendar on our website too. So finally, let's take a little sneak peek into April, because there is something that's really interesting and cool happening April 5th and 6th, W.C. Handy's Blues Legacy of Dance, featuring the Alabama Youth Ballet Theater.
Exactly. I wanted to mention this because everyone needs to get this on their calendar and go ahead and buy the best tickets they can for this. It's the Alabama Youth Ballet actually received a grant for this, a bicentennial grant. And what this is doing, the Handy family, the ballet dancers, and local artists have all joined together to tell about Alabama native W.C. Handy's story. Using his own words and in his own music, W.C. Handy had a huge influence on American music and dance, and we can make all of us very proud to know what W.C. Handy, the legacy he left. Featuring, and you aren't going to believe this, they have Ron Handy, a relative of W.C. Handy, performing in this Legacy of the Dance, as well as the Huntsville Spiritual Chorale.
Fabulous.
And it is going to be, actually, they have taken this and taken parts of this and done it throughout the year, and they will do it later on in the year at different festivals and things. But this is their Huntsville debut of this, April 5th and 6th at the Bon Bon Playhouse.
So many things to do and so many ways to get involved with the bicentennial year that we're enjoying here. Sally, if you had to say something to a person to encourage them or inspire them to get out of the house and go check out one of these events, what would you say? What will one of our listeners get from taking part in one of these events?
Well, you know, as I've said before, we have so much to be proud of in North Alabama, and especially in Madison County. This is where the state of Alabama was born 200 years ago. There is so much history here, and you don't just have to be a history lover to enjoy how that has flavored our entire area. There are many free activities that they can partake in. And I bet you there's something of interest, even if they're not hardcore historians. We can find something that they will want to take part in to celebrate Alabama's history.
Sally Warden, thanks. See you next month.
Thank you very much.
This is the Public Radio Hour on 89.3 Huntsville, our weekly mix of special programs and homemade radio features. On Tuesday, Governor Kay Ivey delivered her State of the State address and rolled out an extensive spending plan, topped off by a proposed 10-cent increase on the state fuel tax that, if approved, would be phased in over 3 years, eventually creating an estimated $320 million a year once fully implemented. Most of this proposed tax increase would go toward improving state roadways, though local municipalities would also get a share, and a portion of the money could also go toward improvements in Mobile Bay to aid imports and exports at the port of Mobile. Ivey also called for spending money to fund 50 more state troopers and 500 new correction officers in the state's overburdened prison system. The governor also hopes to spend $25 million to expand Alabama's pre-K program by 193 classrooms and provide a 4% pay raise for teachers and a 2% pay raise for state workers. Let's have another listen to her plans. Here's Governor Kay Ivey and her State of the State address. We'll follow it with the Democratic response by Representative Barbara Drummond. This is the Public Radio Hour on 89.3 Huntsville.
In our 20 years of statehood, the men and women of Alabama have always stepped forward when our nation called. And when our country needed defending, the legendary Tuskegee Airmen were born. When our country was plagued with injustice, it was an Alabama woman that refused to give up her seat on a bus. And when our country sought to do the impossible and take man to the moon, it was Alabamians that built the rockets that successfully launched and returned them home. The people of our state have shaped the past. They are influencing the present. And without a doubt, they're at the forefront of defining our future. Since this occasion last year, our story in Alabama has continued to evolve with one major accomplishment after another. And at the same time, we are managing to fund state government, remaining conservative with the hard-earned dollars the men and women of this state send to us. Ladies and gentlemen, this evening I am proud to report to you that the state of our state is growing stronger each day. Our recent state's history, combined with the willing attitude that I sense in the chamber this evening, will aid in our quest to overcome our long-neglected issues and will help us achieve even greater prosperity for the entire state. We will accomplish this together because we are Alabama and this is our time. Alabama's economy is breaking records some thought we would never see. In 2018 alone, Alabama achieved a historic total of $8.8 billion in new capital investments, which created more than 17,000 new and future jobs for our people. Major technology companies like Amazon and Facebook, Google and Shipt are showing the rest of the country what it means to do business in our state. Alabama is on track to be the number two auto-producing state in the nation in less than 5 years. Now, you know, that's pretty remarkable. Since 25 years ago, we did not produce a single car, truck, or SUV. And our aerospace industry is once again redefining the futures of both of our state and our nation. With the recent groundbreaking for Airbus's second assembly line, the city of Mobile is positioned to be one of the top four cities in the entire world for aerospace manufacturing. And up in Huntsville, construction has begun on Blue Origin's $200 million rocket production facility, further solidifying Alabama's critical role in putting the United States at the forefront of space exploration. Now, just as Alabama has emerged as a powerhouse in the automotive and the aerospace industries, our Department of Commerce, under the direction of Secretary Greg Canfield, is working hard to expand project activity in areas like technology, forestry, and bioscience. Members of the legislature, companies from around the globe want to be a part of the gold standard that is known by the Made in Alabama brand. And make no mistake about it, the upward trend in Alabama's economy is a direct complement to the men and women in Alabama's workforce. These very men and women are regaining hope because of the good-paying jobs that are pouring into our state. The Department of Labor, under the capable leadership of Secretary Fitzgerald Washington, is working hard to ensure we fulfill our vision of connecting every Alabamian who wants a job with a job. Ladies and gentlemen, Alabama has seen a record-breaking year. Last year, we recorded the lowest unemployment rate in our history, 3.7%. That's a record for our state. In December 2018, Alabama reported having the most people working in our state's history. That means 49,000 more Alabamians are working today than were working a year ago. That's a record for our state. When economists predicted that we would gain 27,000 jobs in 2018. In natural Alabama fashion, y'all, we exceeded that projection by supporting more than 44,000 additional jobs. That, too, is a record for our state. even so, there are some 80,000 Alabamians seeking employment opportunities. And to those across our state tonight who are still searching, I urge you not to lose faith, because we are not going to rest on our efforts and we will not leave you behind. Regardless of an individual's own individual situation, every Alabamian must be given the opportunity to provide for themselves and their family, enabling them to climb the ladder to success. For us to better provide for all of our citizens, it is vitally important that Alabama has maximum participation in the upcoming 2020 census. We will be launching the Alabama Counts campaign next month, with the goal simply being to secure much-needed federal funds for our state. And at the same time, we are ensuring that our representation in Congress remains unchanged, guaranteeing Alabamians a strong voice for the next decade. As you would expect, the hardworking men and women of Alabama will always come first in the Ivey administration. Under Republican leadership over the past few years, the people of Alabama have experienced major gains. We have seen significant growth in our economy. We have cut taxes on middle-class families, and we are shrinking government. You know, sometimes people just forget that during the past few years, we have repealed more than 300 obsolete laws and regulations. And since 2010, we have reduced the number of state employees by more than 6,000 people. That means we are operating leaner, smarter, and stronger. And because of the approach taken by Republican leadership since 2010, Alabama has literally saved hundreds of millions of dollars. And as we know, every dollar spent by government belongs to the hardworking men and women of our state. Last year, I was very proud to sign into law the largest tax break for middle-class Alabamians in more than a decade. In turn, the total impact is projected to net $40 million over the next decade, and all of our efforts are centered on doing what is right, what is best for the people of our state, and that begins with protecting their hard-earned dollars whenever and however we can. Doing what is best and right for our people also means giving Alabamians opportunity for a quality education. Through Strong Start, Strong Finish, we are making important strides to improve Alabama's education system. For a child to reach their fullest potential later in life, they must first build a strong educational foundation. Under the nationally recognized leadership of Secretary Gina Ross, the tremendous efforts of the Department of Early Childhood Education have enabled Alabama's first-class pre-K to be ranked as the nation's highest quality program for the 12th consecutive year. And Gina, thank you so much. And more importantly, our efforts are giving more of Alabama's children a strong start. Last year, we increased funding by $18.5 million in first-class pre-K, which is the largest single-year increase ever approved. And because of that historic investment, 107 new first-class pre-K classrooms were added last fall, which led Alabama to officially break the 1,000 classroom mark. And additionally, our P-3 pilot program, aimed at building upon the gains made in pre-K, grew by 75 classrooms this school year. As we anticipate the rising demand of the computer science field, we are continuing our efforts to enhance computer science education in Alabama. Last year, I signed legislation establishing the Alabama School of Cyber Technology and Engineering. We also secured additional funding to create the Alabama Math and Science Teacher Education Program, which provides a better pathway to certify future computer science teachers. Today in Alabama, women and minorities make up well over half of the population, yet they are underrepresented in the STEM professions. Tonight, I am pleased to have with us a young woman who is the face of changing this disparity, specifically in the area of computer science. Arrington Harper is currently a senior at the Alabama School of Fine Arts in Birmingham. In her ninth grade year, she had her very first computer science class. And since then, Arrington has excelled. She is a recipient of the Aspirations in Computer Science Award for Alabama. She is an advocate for computer science education and girls in computer science. She wants to use her passion to help address the gender and race gaps that exist in computer science education. Arrington has spoken to numerous groups of parents and educators and was invited by the National Center for Women in IT to share her experiences at large. She plans to major in computer science in college. Now, Arrington represents my vision for education in our state. It was in a classroom where she discovered her niche. And through the guidance of her dedicated teachers and her own hard work, this young lady is headed into a very promising future. Arrington, please stand and let us recognize you. Arrington, we are mighty proud of you, and we thank you so much and appreciate your grandmama, Ms. Cooper, being with you tonight. Equipping our students with the proper skills and education to fill high-demand jobs is essential to ensure their strong finish. Part of my mission for the state is to carve a path for our students to enter the workforce, and so that they'll enter the workforce with highly skilled and well-equipped to further our efforts. I'm asking the legislature to fund our new co-op program for the Alabama Historically Black Colleges and Universities. This program is geared specifically toward Alabama's HBCU students interested in pursuing careers in the science, technology, engineering, and mathematics fields. Now, it's not only a win for these students, it's a win for the colleges and universities. And it's a win for our employers who are gaining qualified individuals to strengthen the work of their company. Each year, as you know, the uses of the internet intensify in dynamic ways. Delivering high-speed broadband access is absolutely necessary. Last year, through the Alabama Broadband Accessibility Act, we connected broadband in 7 counties. One notable example is in Choctaw County. Within the next 2 years, more than 700 residences and businesses will have access to high-speed internet service. Thanks to this grant program, living in rural Alabama does not mean being cut out. This is a major step for education, for economic prosperity, and for the entire state of Alabama. In our efforts to meet the current and future needs of business and industry, I have established the Governor's Office of Education and Workforce Transformation. The focus will solely be on aligning our workforce development funding streams to create the most effective workforce development programs for Alabamians across the state. Since we met last year, I have been ambitious in our efforts to improve Alabama's education system, and we are now on our way to providing all students a quality education. Each of us has our own story to tell. My own story began in the public schools of rural Wilcox County, Alabama. I graduated from high school in a class that had 35 students. My surroundings at Auburn University would look a whole lot different. Instead of a class of 35, I would be in a class of a university of more than 12,000. My Wilcox County upbringing would be put side by side with some of the smartest young people from bigger schools and larger cities. However, I just wouldn't let these challenges hinder me from achieving success. So in the summer before my first semester, I spent a full week on campus to walk the grounds to know exactly where my classes would be located and also to try out for the Auburn University Marching Band. Ben Franklin said it best, if you fail to plan, you're planning to fail. I worked hard and planned for success. And my journey from Wilcox County also brought me to where I stand this evening. And despite the heavy challenges that lie ahead, we in Alabama must plan for success. And part of that planning for that success is ensuring that we have a robust economy and ample public safety. Now, we can help tackle both of these issues with a reasonable increase in the investment we make in our state's infrastructure system. Almost three decades have gone by, and Alabama has not made one change to our infrastructure funding. While our neighboring states are increasing their revenue for their transportation budgets, Alabama has not. Folks, we are dead last. And certainly motorists experiencing firsthand the poor conditions of Alabama's infrastructure is a problem. Each year in Alabama, 69 billion miles are driven on our roadways. We have urban roads in poor condition. Our drivers are experiencing major congestion on our freeways. County governments currently operate on a 56-year resurfacing schedule, when in fact, we should be operating on a 15-year rate. In Alabama, half of over our 16,000 bridges are older than their 50-year lifespan. Bridges should be replaced every 50 years. Yet county governments are on a schedule to replace their bridges every 186 years. Folks, that's almost as long as Alabama's been a state. From 2015 to 2017, Alabama saw nearly 3,000 traffic fatalities, and one-third of those were due to deficiencies in our roadways. Each year, $436 billion in goods are shipped to and from businesses using our state's roadways. The Port of Mobile, Alabama's only deep-water port, moves approximately 64 million tons of cargo each year. Deepening and widening the port will increase Alabama's capability. And this will enhance our status as a primary industrial and agricultural hub in the Southeast. Driving on these rough roads costs the average Alabamian $507 annually in additional vehicle maintenance. And that's a total of $2 billion statewide each year. That is why we are proposing a 10-cent increase in Alabama's fuel tax. This increase will be implemented over the next 3 years. And I want to be crystal clear with you. This money will be scrutinized and watched over every single penny. There will be strong accountability measures to make sure that these monies are spent solely on transportation infrastructure, period. Leading the charge in the legislature on this issue is Representative Bill Poole. He, along with Senator Clyde Chambliss, will guide this legislation over the coming weeks. And I indeed thank both of them for their dedicated leadership and willingness to lead this opportunity. Additionally, I have listened to leaders making some good points about money being diverted from the Alabama Department of Transportation to supplement our court system and the law enforcement agency every year. I believe that we should begin to unwind this outdated approach. And in fact, the budgets I am presenting will cut this annual transfer in half without hurting the court system or our hardworking state law enforcement officers. A renewed investment in infrastructure will lead to safer roads, economic prosperity, and an enhanced quality of life. Ladies and gentlemen, I am willing to call you, the members of the Alabama legislature, into a special session if necessary to focus solely on passing this critical legislation. It's time to make our crumbling infrastructure system a problem of our past. This is a challenge that is felt by every Alabamian, clearly making this issue a bipartisan issue. And as governor, I say enough is enough. Now is the time to rebuild Alabama. Another problem that has gone unaddressed for years and years is that of the horrendous conditions of our prisons. Our next step, however, must be to address the issue of understaffing to improve our recruiting and retention efforts. Alabama is currently under a federal court order requiring the state to roughly double the number of corrections officers over the next 2 years. And if we fail to resolve this apparent issue of understaffing in our prisons, federal courts will dictate what needs to happen in our own state. And I am proposing that we include an additional $31 million in the general fund budget. This will allow us to hire 500 new correctional officers and increase the pay scale for all prison security personnel to make their salary competitive. Folks, this is an Alabama problem that must have an Alabama solution. And as we move forward, we must continue to wisely use our funds. I'm proud that the general fund budget I'm proposing will do just that. As a positive sign of that progress, Medicaid, under the capable leadership of Commissioner Stephanie Azar, will require $40 million less in 2020 than compared to 2019. The Medicaid program in Alabama is driving efficiency while being prudent with our taxpayers' dollars. I'm also proposing an additional $7 million to fund important mental health programs in our state. And as governor, I will do everything in my power to make Alabama safer, which is why my general fund budget includes funding to hire and train 50 additional state troopers. I have also included in my budget a 2% pay raise for all state employees. These men and women went too long without merit raises, and with the increase last year and the additional increase this year, we are making it right. Like my general fund budget, my education budget is practical, while still helping more Alabamians receive the opportunity for a quality education. My education budget will provide $25 million to expand our nationally recognized first-class pre-K program. This significant increase will expand the program by 193 classrooms. And this will be the largest investment in Alabama's first-class pre-K to date and takes us even closer to providing more of Alabama's youngest learners a strong start. Alabama's institutions of higher education are making major research contributions. They generate significant revenue for our state. They serve as a major part of our identity in Alabama. And most importantly, they are preparing hundreds of thousands of students to enter the workforce. And because of their significant contributions in our state, my budget provides an increased investment of $75 million to our four-year public colleges and universities. These institutions are essential to the future of our state. Alabama's teachers are vital to our students throughout every step of their learning journeys. And these teachers deserve to be the highest paid public employees in our state. And so that's why tonight, I'm proposing to the legislature a 4% raise for all teachers, pre-K through community college. You see, without our teachers, our students cannot achieve success. The foundation for a strong future for all Alabamians begins in the classrooms. And members, I remind you that our long story in Alabama will go long past the time that you and I are in office. When we make improvements of our state's infrastructure, to our prisons, and to our education system, we are planting a seed of opportunity for Alabama's next 200 years. And ladies and gentlemen, I am a governor looking beyond the next 4, the next 8, or even 10 years. I'm a governor leading our state into the next century. I am all in. And the people of our great state need you, the legislators, to be all in as well. Democrats, Republicans, progressives, and conservatives, to achieve a better future in Alabama, all of us must be willing to build on our successes. We must be willing to overcome our long-neglected issues. We must be willing to take the next step, because we are Alabama, and this is our time. And may God continue to bless each of you and the great state of Alabama.
That was Governor Kay Ivey delivering her State of the State address on Tuesday night. The governor did indeed call lawmakers into a special session now underway to consider her proposed 10-cent fuel tax increase meant to fund infrastructure improvements. And that tax increase did clear a House committee today and could come up for consideration by the full House as early as tomorrow. Also on Tuesday, the Alabama Democratic Party had its say. Here's the Democratic response delivered by Representative Barbara Drummond of Mobile here on the Public Radio Hour on 89.3. Huntsville.
4 years ago, I stood on the banks of the Alabama River in Oroville, a stone's throw from Selma, remembering my mom's stories about her hometown. Growing up, she would tell us how her family had left to seek out opportunities in urban cities like Mobile and Birmingham. They sought lives where their children could get a better education, where job opportunities flowed freely, and access to quality health care was readily available. Mom's hometown is a historic treasure trove, but the people of Oroville, like so many in our rural communities, are still struggling for opportunity. They don't want a handout, but a place at the table to compete, thrive, and enjoy the fruits of their hard work. Too many Alabamians do not have access to the resources they need, like quality education, affordable health care, workforce development, and career opportunities, all creating the risk that they may leave altogether, taking their talents and resources to other states. As I stand here this evening to deliver the Democratic response to the governor's State of the State address, the stories of families like my mom are foremost in my mind. We will grapple with many tough issues this session in our effort to move Alabama forward. But we must never forget that it is the people behind the policies that we hold foremost in our hearts and minds as we move forward together. I know you've been hearing a lot from Montgomery about a proposed gas tax and the importance of investing in Alabama's infrastructure. We face a real problem. A vital system in our state is suffering from decades of neglect and underinvestment. And we want to make sure, as we as the legislature, that we are exploring all available options to address this issue. House Democrats, however, we want to make it very clear that we believe there's a lot more to strengthening infrastructure than just fixing roads and bridges. Don't get me wrong. Democrats want good roads and bridges. But we are also mindful of the human infrastructure that is so critical to the health and future of our state. Building a solid infrastructure means investing in the people of Alabama. It means making good sense decisions that strengthens our economy and increase opportunities in every community across the state. The people of Perry County needs to know that they will receive the same quality of investment in their present and future as the people of Madison County. We need to ensure that all Alabamians, that their personal American dream is within reach and is obtainable. For the past 5 years, House Democrats have fought to expand Medicaid as other states, even those with conservative leaderships, they have moved forward right around us. We've seen the impact of expansion on the lives of working people currently undergirded by a health care system that yields very few options for struggling families. And we have also seen the economic impact of expansion at both the state and local level. A recent study from the University of Alabama, Birmingham, estimated that the state economic impact of expansion to be $11.4 billion over the next 4 years with a $316 million in state savings. I want to say that again, $11.4 billion in economic impact and a $316 million in state savings. Meanwhile, this month, we will lose our 13th hospital with over half of the closures in rural areas. And countless other hospitals are struggling just to keep their doors open. This is a loss we cannot accept, both for the health care of our rural communities and the economic strength of our state as a whole. Investing in Medicaid expansion is not only about increasing access to health care. It's about supporting economic infrastructure, which is just as important and vital as the roads we drive on. Alabama hospitals employ 90,000 Alabamians and support another 96,000. Their economic impact is $20 billion. It is essential that we prioritize the stability of our hospitals, not only for the physical health of our people, but also the physical health of our state. Prioritizing infrastructure also means doubling down on a commitment to education. We've seen the positive impact our first-class pre-K program has had on 32% of the children in Alabama who have access. But that still leaves far too many children behind. Let's work together to expand pre-K system, making sure that all Alabama children, not just some, are given this critical building block for future success. And we cannot stop there. House Democrats are committed to working toward funding public education all the way up the ladder, from pre-K through college, including underfunded HBCUs. We also understand that not all children want to have or to go to traditional colleges or universities. We believe that there's a meaningful career-ready program built around workforce development that can help link employers with qualified workers who understand the value of hard work and opportunity. If we want our children to stay in Alabama, to raise families of their own and contribute their skills and talents to building vibrant communities, we need to make sure we're providing them with the support and resources that they need. I also want to take a moment to talk to you about another of our most pressing infrastructure challenges, the state of our correctional facilities. We agree with Governor Ivey. Something needs to be done about the deplorable conditions in these facilities. An ingrained pattern of over-incarceration and underinvestment has brought us to a crisis point, and we must act. However, House Democrats do not believe we can simply build our way to a better and safer and more rehabilitative correctional system. We support a comprehensive approach to our criminal justice challenges, grounded in thoughtful, evidence-based solutions proven to reduce recidivism and make all our communities safer. Our prisons remain 160% above capacity without a renewed commitment to safely reducing our incarcerated population and investing in community supervision and treatment, our corrections budget will remain unstable. Alabama needs real criminal justice reform that is not only physically sound, but also proven to produce results. Now, we're aware that we cannot talk about infrastructure without talking about budgets. This session, House Democrats are thinking creatively about revenue generation. We're ready to turn toward bold, innovative ideas that we've seen work in neighboring states. This means supporting familiar policies we believe in, like a lottery. And it means opening up to new ideas like legalizing medical marijuana. So how did we decide on our infrastructure priorities? House Democrats have spent the last month hosting listening sessions in an effort to hear from you, the people of Alabama, about the issues that impact you the most. Rather than speak, we intentionally decided to listen. Rather than educate, we knew it was our turn to learn. And we want you to know that we heard you. We heard that it isn't just concrete and construction we should be investing in. It's you, the hardworking people of our state. From Mobile to Huntsville, this is just the beginning of what will be an ongoing and robust conversation to elevate your voice in what should be in your government. We ask you to join us and invest in Alabama's future by supporting a comprehensive vision for how to improve our infrastructure, both roads and bridges, and its people and their opportunities, that we work to lessen political partisanship and petty bickering and instead embrace a working relationship that we can work together in order to move Alabama forward, as God says, as one. God bless each of you, and God bless the wonderful state of Alabama.
That was Representative Barbara Drummond of Mobile delivering the Democratic response to Governor Kay Ivey's State of the State address from earlier this week. Thanks to our friends at Alabama Public Television's Capital Journal for helping us share the audio. Thanks for tuning in to the Public Radio Hour. We hope you enjoyed the show. You can find our podcast archive at WLRH.org. Just look under Programs or go to iTunes and search for the Public Radio Hour. And please be sure to keep sharing your feedback, as we do love to hear what you're thinking. Have a great night.